Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Patrick Battuello, founder and president of Horse Racing Wrongs. It's a nonprofit organization committed to ending what they call the cruel and deadly horse racing industry in the United States. Patrick Battuello has been writing on animal rights issues since 2009 when he launched the animal rights blog for the Albany Times Union, one of the first of its kind in the U.S. Patrick founded Horse Racing Wrongs in 2013. Through his FOIA reporting, Freedom of Information Act reporting, he has become recognized as the nation's foremost expert on racehorse deaths. He and his work have appeared in The Washington Post, USA Today, Deadspin, on HBO's Real Sports, CNN, ESPN, among many others. Patrick has also testified on racing before the New York State Senate. And on their website, horseracingwrongs.org, they report that since January 1st of 2014, they've confirmed 12,231 horse deaths at U.S. tracks. And from the top of their website, perhaps these words describe how they feel best. You can love horses, you can love horse racing, you can't love both. We welcome to the Capital Connection, Patrick Battuello. Great to have you back with us.
Thank you so much for having me, David. I appreciate it.
I've had you on since I learned of you, and it's the right of everyone to state their opinion, and I know that yours is based on a lot of facts. So we bring you here today to present the other side of what is a major industry in New York State. And I want to also let folks know that one of the things that happened to you recently is you were supposed to speak at the Saratoga Springs Library, and it seems like after some pressure, your talk was canceled because of the subject, anti-racing. You're in Saratoga Springs, obviously the Saratoga track, the race course is there, it's big industry there. Just before we begin, Patrick, share a little bit about that experience.
Sure. So this goes back a couple of months, David. I reached out to Saratoga and asked if they would be interested in sponsoring a talk. And the key word is sponsoring because you can reserve a room in almost any library without library involvement, but that would defeat the purpose. It would be me filling a room with 50 advocates and preaching to the choir. So I really wanted an opportunity to hit the general public, especially in Saratoga Springs. And to my delight, they agreed back in May to sponsor a talk, which meant that they would handle all the publicity, promotion, advertising, all the registration would be done through them. They even gave me two dates, July 15th and July 28th, a daytime and an evening. The person whom I was dealing with was terrific. And then at the very last moment, the Friday before, I was scheduled for this past Wednesday, the 15th, the Friday before, they pulled the rug out, canceled the talk, saying that admitting in a public statement that because of the, quote, thoughtful feedback from people in the racing industry, they felt that it would be unfair to have me speak unilaterally. They thought that it'd be unfair to the industry, unfair to an industry, by the way, that for all practical purposes has had a monopoly on the public discourse in this area for the past century plus. Saratoga race course has been sacrosanct. You can't touch it. Yeah, it was very upsetting. I was angry, but I was also sad. Sad that we are the horse's voice and we were not allowed to give voice to their suffering. And by the way, you mentioned the facts. Everything that I utter in my talk, and I've talked at Skidmore, Albany Law, Siena, Hudson Valley, and among others, everything that I say is backed up by either hard data, the dead horses speak for themselves, or by expert testimony. So when I identify a cruelty, say confinement, I have an equine veterinarian speaking about the cruelty of confinement or whipping, drugging, what have you. So it's all backed up. It's not just an animal rights activist saying that's cruel. So yeah, very upsetting, but we fight on. And it's just, and you've been gracious to have me on again. And we've gotten quite a bit of coverage because of their cowardly move to cancel the talk after they were intimidated by the racing people.
It's a bit ironic in my mind that as we were about to celebrate the 250th year of this country based on free speech, that occurred. Moving on from that, let's talk about why you're so passionate about trying to eliminate what you call cruelty to horses. And let's start with this. The business of horse racing itself is in major decline. Various quotes you put on your website cite this. And it's not lost on me that even in New York, subsidies run high when it comes to the horse racing industry. Can you talk about the business of horse racing for a moment?
Yeah, so to put it simply, horse racing in America is a house of cards. So roughly 75% of all U.S. tracks are being propped up by taxpayer dollars. In New York, which, by the way, is the most subsidized state in the country, that translates to over $250 million annually, almost $4 billion since the subsidies began in 2004. So it is no exaggeration to say that 9 of the 11 current racetracks in New York would have shuttered years ago, and with only Belmont, and it only because of one weekend a year, by the way, the Belmont Stakes weekend, and Saratoga surviving. This is corporate welfare on a shocking scale. It's about $1 billion in total across the country every year, but in New York, it's about a quarter of that on its own.
And yet, there's a bit of a caveat here, isn't there? And you've acknowledged this to me over the years, Patrick Batuello, president and founder of Horse Racing Wrongs, the idea that Saratoga is the place. The museum is there. The history of Saratoga is so wrapped up in the horse racing industry. Again, you've acknowledged that it's probably going to survive there.
Yeah, it defines anomaly. So Saratoga Racecourse is probably the preeminent track in the country. It is self-sustaining, so the argument that they need money is absurd on its face. We recognize that. This is just happens to be the track in our backyard. Growing up in this area, I was born and raised in the Capital Region, so I know full well how big a part of the culture, the community Saratoga Racecourse is. It is not just a place for hardened gamblers to go. We were just up there this past Sunday protesting. We'll be out there again this upcoming Sunday, which is Family Day, by the way. So you do see families, you do see younger people in high school and college, which you don't see at Finger Lakes, which you don't see at a Belmont other than Belmont Stakes Day, or 97% of the other tracks in the country. It's different. It's a social scene as well as a place to gamble. But all the cruelties that exist across the country at every other track exist at the same level at Saratoga Racecourse. And the killing, again, the numbers speak for themselves. Over 250 dead horses at Saratoga since 2009. Saratoga averages 15 kills per summer. Over an 8-week summer meet, about 15 kills. It's almost guaranteed, if you look at the numbers year to year, that 15 horses will die during the course of the meet. Again, that's racing, training, and stall. We don't differentiate between the three types of deaths. It's just as cruel as Finger Lakes, just as deadly as Finger Lakes. It's just that Saratoga has a whole different marketing scheme and has been successful. And we acknowledge that, as you said.
Now, I do want to say, NIRA officials say that they have the health and safety of horses and jockeys as their highest priority. But when you look at what's called the sport of kings, regular folks who show up to watch horse racing, they're often misinformed, think that, we've heard this a lot, Patrick, the horses love to run. They really enjoy this.
Right. They love to run. That's the great irony here. They say that they love to run, and then they stick them in a tiny 12-by-12 box alone, by the way. These are social herd animals for over 23 hours a day. That's love to run. They exhibit the stereotypies and what are called stall vices, things like bobbing, swaying, weaving, cribbing, what's called windsucking. They'll suck in air. Sometimes they self-mutilate. These are clear, unequivocal signs of mental and emotional duress. And I've been told by countless horse people who've taken horses off the track in their retirement, sometimes these vices never go away. It's profoundly sad, and it's something that most people don't hear about and don't understand fully. The deaths speak for themselves, and when NIRA talks about the welfare of the horse, they're not going to do anything about confinement because that's how you protect your assets, by sticking them in this box. You can't have them out in an open pasture with other horses for fear that they would break a bone or be compromised in some way. They're assets, and that's how they protect them. So that's the worst part of their lives, is the confinement. But there are other things that are just as bad. When you talk about the drugging and the doping, I think people know about that. The whipping. Imagine if you saw someone whipping his dog in the park, you and everyone else around you would call 911, and that person would be arrested on the spot for animal cruelty, in New York, felony animal cruelty. Yet at the racetrack, it's all considered just part of the game, and make no mistake, they're whipping the horses. We've got extensive documentation on that from scientists. It's, of course it hurts. That's why they do it. Run faster or I will hit you. So from start to finish, it's cruelty defined. And again, it's not just about horses dying. It's the everyday abuse. And you mentioned NYRA and the welfare of the horse. I've heard from a lot of racehorse people say, come visit my stable area. We'll show you how pampered these horses are. We hear this all the time. It's all a question of how you define quality of life, right? They define it as the horse is being fed, is being given medical attention, is being protected from the elements and from predators. That to them is a good life. I don't define it a good life that way. That horse is, and I know this is an inflammatory word, but is enslaved. They have lost any autonomy that they were born with. They don't have any agency. They can't be a horse. They're not allowed to be around other horses. Again, stuck in these stalls, solitary confinement. And you mentioned the sport of kings. In what other sport does that apply? In what other sport are the athletes literal chattel? In what other sport are they beaten for motivation? In what other sport are they regularly dying on the playing field? In the 418-year combined history of America's four major sports, baseball, basketball, football, and hockey, there have been three in-game deaths. About that many horses die in U.S. races every single day. So this idea that it's a sport is an obscenity, and it's time that people start looking at it through a clear lens. And for me, the most obvious comparison is dog racing. And when we were up there Sunday, I was holding a sign that showed two greyhounds muzzled and being forced to race, and a racehorse being whipped and being forced to race with a simple sentence, it's the same thing. It is the exact same thing. In fact, I argue that horse racing is worse because many of these horses, if not most of them, when their careers or so-called careers are over, land in equine hell, the slaughterhouse. That's something that did not exist in dog racing. Dog racing is prohibited on moral grounds in 44 states, including New York. There are just two tracks left in West Virginia, and they're in danger of closing. There was a House-passed Greyhound Protection Act this past April that if it passes the Senate, it'll eliminate it federally. There'll be no more dog racing in the entire United States. And yet we give horse racing a pass under the banner of sport. It's not rational. I think if you just come to it with a clear mind and an open heart, you'll see it for what it is. And that's our message, David. When we're out there protesting, is especially with the young families coming in, this is the same thing as dog racing. You wouldn't be here if there were whipping dogs to race today. You got to get beyond this, what they used to call it, the August place to be, Saratoga Racecourse. You got to get beyond the marketing and see it for what it is.
He is Patrick Batuello, founder and president of Horse Racing Wrongs. You can learn more at horseracingwrongs.org. You mentioned in passing the doping part of it, and it made me think the only thing that's similar between the, quote, sport of horse racing and the other sports is doping. But even then, the athletes themselves have chosen to do that. And one of the biggest investigations, that there's a video on your website with the U.S. attorney in Southern New York where they charged 27 defendants. And this is in doping across the country. So we know it goes on, and they're being doped by the very trainers that are supposed to be protecting them.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that big case broke right around the time COVID happened in March of 2020. And the FBI had a slew of other evidence against trainers and owners that they could not pursue because they just ran out of time and resources. So they handed off a lot of this evidence to the relevant gaming commissions or racing commissions in each state. And those commissions did nothing with it. And that's, we do have a page on our website explaining all that. So the upshot is there are owners and trainers still racing today that were involved in this illegal doping scandal that broke in 2020, and no one has done anything about it. But yeah, that's a big part of this story. And you hit the nail on the head. A baseball player back in the steroid era who he did it willingly and fully consensual, of course, and he's doing it to himself. Nothing like that exists in horse racing. It's being done to them, and that's another one of the cruelties that we talk about.
Patrick Batuello, you can hear the passion in your voice, and I know this has been a single focus for you for a while now, but where does this all come from, Patrick? I know you've explained it in the past, but maybe it's good to remind listeners how you came to form this organization. What motivated you?
Sure. So when I was writing that animal rights blog for the Times Union, that was 2009, I started researching horse racing, And two things jumped out. There was a dearth of information out there. No one knew how many horses were dying, let alone how they were dying. And by the way, that's another big part of this. People really need to understand how they die. Look up the reports on our website, the state-by-state reports, especially states like Maryland and Kentucky, where we get a lot of detail. And you start reading through it, and when the industry says they want to talk about how it's getting safer, first off, it's not true. It's not getting safer, according to our data. But also, it doesn't speak to the day-to-day horrors and how these horses are dying. Broken necks, severed spines, fractured skulls, you name it. But I'm sorry, getting back to your question, there was no information out there. And then second, there was no group in the country taking this industry on. So I thought that the racehorses were getting short shrift in the animal rights community. And that's why I formed Horse Racing Wrongs. I don't have an equine background. I didn't know anything about horse racing beyond growing up here and being a sports fan when I was younger and rooting on Seattle SLU and Affirmed. And I knew who Secretariat was. So I really had to immerse myself in this and to learn all about horses and the racing industry. And that's where it came from. There was a void in the animal rights community, and I decided I needed to fill it.
Now, what about lobbying New York State lawmakers, Patrick? Because the way I understand it is that animals are categorized under the Agricultural and Markets Law, which means they're commodities, as you point out. They're products. So what about the reclassification?
Yeah, I don't think that's a viable route forward. As far as what we're doing in New York, we do have a bill here that will end the subsidies or would end the subsidies. It is a tall task because this industry, as you mentioned, is very powerful, especially in New York, the New York Racing Association specifically, which runs Saratoga and Belmont Aqueduct, is closed now because the new Belmont, which was renovated a taxpayer dime, by the way, over $500 million. So we understand it's a major mountain to climb here in New York. But I will tell you that when we did a lot of lobbying early on with this bill in Albany, most of the legislators knew nothing about the subsidies. They weren't around in 2004. It's just something that just wasn't on their radar. So we did a lot of educating, and most of them agreed with us. Unfortunately, as with state politics, it usually comes down to three men/women in a room making those decisions on where the money goes. And Governor Hochul is a pro-racing person. Her husband used to work in the industry. She gets money from the racing industry from campaign contributions. So unfortunately, as long as she's in office, we're not going to see any movement on that. But doesn't mean we stop trying and continue to educate as many legislators as we can. So when the time comes, we'll be in better position. It is, again, very difficult because of Belmont being the site of the third leg of the Triple Crown and Saratoga, which, as I mentioned, is maybe the top track in the country. But of course, we continue to fight.
And you're not just fighting over the treatment of the horses, but for people who are New Yorkers, you're also fighting over the use of their tax dollars.
100%. This is an obscene use of taxpayer money. Back in the Great Recession, as we all remember, the government bailed out the finance industry. They bailed out the automobile industry. Of course, they're too big to fail, as the saying goes. That doesn't apply to horse racing. Everyone knows that. So why do we keep throwing this money? And I will share an anecdote. So one of the first offices we went into in Albany to lobby, an old seasoned legislative director came out to engage us in friendly debate. When I cited what at the time was the $230 million per year that New York racing was being gifted, it's over $250 now. He quickly dismissed it as but a rounding error in the New York State budget. I said, maybe, but that's about $1 billion every 4 years. How many new teachers and support staff could we hire with that kind of money? How many early childhood and lunch programs funded? How many decaying school buildings modernized? To his credit, he nodded and conceded the point. So I mentioned education because the primary recipient of all state-sanctioned gambling, whether it's the lottery, casinos, sports betting now, or horse racing, is supposed to be education. And here we are taking $250 million away from children, school children, every year to prop up this archaic, cruel industry. And again, if Saratoga is so successful and Belmont is now renovated and they're promising to draw all kinds of new people to this renovated venue, then they don't need the money. So stop taking taxpayer dollars. And again, when you start tallying it up, almost $4 billion since 2004, I'm sure you can think of a lot of better uses for that money than propping up the horse racing industry.
But you've already cited the politics involved. You're running a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You don't have bags of money to put in people's campaigns. So when it comes to the influence peddling, you have way less power than other organizations. And it's not just NYRA. It's so many other organizations that have influence.
That is true. It is a David versus Goliath. But David, from the beginning, I said I have to arm myself with facts, irrefutable facts and evidence, and let them speak for themselves. And that's what we do. So when we go into these offices, and we don't even need to argue the cruelty and killing. We throw it in there, of course, because that's what we care about the most, are the animals. But we could argue this just on the finances and say, how do you justify this? How do you justify $1 billion every 4 years to prop up this industry when the state is always crying for more money and there's never enough for education, transportation, property tax relief, you name it? So, yeah, it's a David versus Goliath. But as I said, most of the legislators that we met with agreed with us and they found this shocking if they didn't know anything about it. So we just need to keep hammering away. And we're working in other states. We're a national nonprofit. We've been working very diligently in Pennsylvania, which is the second leading subsidy state. And we're on the verge of getting a bill introduced there. Both the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the two major newspapers in PA, have called for the subsidies to end. It's just a matter of educating with help from people like you, just putting me on, giving us a forum to talk about this, educating the public, educating legislators. And this is my hope, my belief, that once we get one state to crack, once one state rolls back these subsidies, others will follow. And that's when this house of cards comes tumbling down. Do I think that horse racing in Kentucky is going to end in my lifetime? No. Do I think that horse racing at Saratoga is going to end in my lifetime? Probably not. But if we can take these subsidies away, like I said, 75% of this industry just crumbles overnight. And we're seeing it in real time, by the way. So the states that don't have subsidies or the states that don't give enough subsidization, you're seeing tracks close. So we have a page on our website, 51 tracks since 2000 have closed. And I just learned that Hawthorne in the Chicago area is in bankruptcy. It was sold to a non-racing entity in the auction process. So that's going to close. There'll be one track left in all of Illinois after that. Nothing left in the Chicago area. Chicago used to be a big hub for horse racing. Northern California has zero horse racing now. Golden Gate Field's closed in 2024. The county fair circuit followed in the wake of that. There's no thoroughbred racing in all of New England, all six states. And they've been desperately trying in Massachusetts since Suffolk Downs closed in 2019 to reintroduce it because there's subsidy money to be had there if they can get it. And every town, I think we're up to seven towns in Massachusetts that they put these petitions up to have a track opened, have shot it down with a lot of help from us leading the organization. The townspeople have said, no, we don't want horse racing in our town. So overall, the news is positive. We are winning this little by little, track by track. It's difficult for people in this area to understand that because of Saratoga. But if you look at the big picture, I'll just throw one number out at you. Adjusted for inflation, total handle, which is the amount wagered on thoroughbred racing, has plummeted 57% since 2003 across the country. Attendance, the industry doesn't even report outside of the big race days and meets like Saratoga. They don't even report attendance figures. It's so embarrassing. In fact, the vast majority of tracks in this country no longer even charge for admission. So they're not making their money on admission. They're not making their money on bets. Anything that is happening in horse racing is coming from the slot machines, which is the taxpayer subsidy that we've been talking about. Overall, the news is good from our perspective. It just doesn't happen fast enough. Horses are dying every day. They're suffering every day. And that's why we have this great urgency.
Patrick Batuello, founder and president of Horse Racing Wrongs. I'm getting a silver lining here. It seems to me that the younger generation of folks doesn't really care about or want to go see horses race.
They don't. And I'm just going to throw this out at you. This Sunday, they're having Children's Day at Saratoga Racecourse. They're going to teach them all about horse racing. They're going to allow children to call out the scratches, which is the term used for horses who are scratched before the race. They're entered the race, they're scratched before the race, and that affects the betting odds, obviously. They're trying to indoctrinate a new generation of not just fans, but bettors. It's all about trying to draw in these young people and introduce them to horse racing, how to bet on horse racing, how to follow horse racing. Of course, none of the bad stuff is going to be shown to these kids. And so that's what we're up against. And again, we'll be out there leafletting on Sunday, just trying to educate parents who are planning to go into the track and to make them understand that this is no place to bring children. It's no place for anybody to be. Again, if they were whipping dogs, they wouldn't be there. Full stop.
Speaking of full stop, I'm afraid we're out of time. He is Patrick Batuello, founder and president of Horse Racing Wrongs. You can find out more at horseracingwrongs.org, including how to get involved. Patrick, I appreciate your work. And as you go forward, we'll keep an eye out and have you back when it's warranted.
Thank you so much, David. We really appreciate the time and given the opportunity to reach a larger audience. Thank you very much.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.